Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the Business of the Business podcast, episode number 105. I am your host, JP John Posner, the two-man power trip. Of course, joining me is my co-host, the wizard himself, Mr. Trump Mania, Mr. Lavi Margolin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I guess if we're in 105, then we're starting year three. There's always a reason to celebrate. And by the time you're listening to this, it's probably Thanksgiving has passed and we're on the road to Hanukkah and Christmas and New Year. So a special fun time of year.
Oh, yes, absolutely. This is the good time of the year for holidays and getting together with family. I don't know. Sometimes this part of the year for wrestling is just, to me, slows down a lot. I don't know if you feel the same way right after Survivor Series. I don't know. To me, it slows down big time.
Yeah, that's true. I think what's good is that, like, the business doesn't go as hard as it used to in terms of keeping the guys on the road with the major promotion. So it is a time to, like, sort of reflect and strategize. And as we look at the business of the business, it's, like, a good time to take a look at, you know, the year in total. And, like, the last 6 weeks, there's not going to be something – yeah, sometimes things surprise you, but like super groundbreaking that you could pretty much have a good sense of like how everyone's year went by the time like Survivor Series is over.
So as far as some news, let's start it off and let's talk about GCW, which we talk about obviously a lot on the show, but let's talk about GCW. What's going on with them? What's the latest?
Yeah, so, you know, an event weekend, somewhat surprisingly. So they were in Providence, so not surprisingly was that they did really well at FET, a small venue that's been on the radar for a number of years as being sort of the home or sort of one of the homes of Beyond Wrestling in New England. And Brett Lauderdale of GCW had tweeted out what's the all-time attendance record at FET because it looked packed. So good turnout there. Then surprisingly, I saw an immediate apology from GCW for comments Chris Hamrick the veteran wrestler had made. He was part of a scramble match, and apparently he had made anti-LGBTQ slurs in character, but you know, not really acceptable today or maybe any time, but certainly, you know, in today's world of wrestling, especially in light of the terrible tragedy that took place in a nightclub in Colorado. I think it was the day before that, if I have my timeline. So kudos to GCW for getting ahead of it. We know that Brett and the GCW team have always been outwardly in support of, you know, fans and, support of LGBTQ community. So that wasn't surprising. I don't think it was anything intentional, 100%. I guess you just have to have, you know, more control of your product. I don't know if any streaming products have like a 7-second delay because, you know, it's not on television. So there didn't seem to be a need to do that, but that might be something for them to consider in the future.
So the one thing I didn't get, that was his character saying, you know, saying that stuff? Like what was the point of him kind of doing that?
Yeah, I haven't dug around to find any clips, which I'm sure are somewhere, but I'm imagining he was playing the heel and trying to get heat, and I don't know if, there were fans that were outwardly expressing, you know, their support of the community, and he found them in the audience, or he just, you know, just made something up on the spot and started saying things. So, but he did issue an apology and saying that he was used to doing it in character, but it was the wrong thing to do. And then he got criticized for saying that he had done it, you know, in character. So I think, not to take away blame from anybody, but I think that, he was admonished, I would imagine, and it was apologetic towards it mostly. I think like when GCW had tweeted out that they were putting his payoff for the night and doubling it, which ended up being $500, he sort of had retweeted, "I was getting $250 a night," like sort of like, I don't know if you'd say making a joke about it, but I would have just like left things alone at that point. But, in it being bad in itself, it is one thing, certainly, and the most important thing. But also, you know, from a business perspective of the focus of this show, right, they just signed a deal with Fight Plus. And Fight Plus is, you know, as we talk about all the time, is a subsidiary of Triller, and they're, I'm not sure if they're yet public or planning to go public and so on. So, you know, there's a corporateness to it. And, especially when you use that type of language and so on, like you could really get canceled and there could be an understandable big public backlash. So it's not just like offending fans in Providence or anyone that watched on the stream, which is bad enough, but you really have to be careful about this, you know, from a business perspective. Not addressing this issue because I think the interview took place in advance of this, but interesting quotes from Mike Weber, of course, former guest of this show, who runs the Fight Division, about having been on the Bischoff podcast, the one that focuses on the business of the business, where he talked about the relationship with GCW. And he said, "GCW has built up a great fan base. One of the things that has been interesting about them is that they are averaging about 75 shows a year. I mean, the volume in the last 6 weeks, they've been to the UK, Japan, Mexico, LA, Chicago, New Jersey, coast to coast. They're doing events everywhere. I mean, they probably travel more and more actively than any other wrestling promotion, bar none, including WWE, including AEW, and they're swinging for the fences and getting it." He also commented that, in not so many words, but the deathmatch thing wasn't for him, which, you know, is understandable.
Man, Bischoff is, and we talked about this before, he's stealing a little bit of our thunder here. You know what I mean? Stealing our gimmick a little bit.
Yeah, but
strictly business.
And, you know, certainly the language when it came out, whoever had developed that. But we were first you know, Eric, you've had a great run at Nitro and everything else, but we're first to this space in modern times. So, and we're willing to defend it.
Yes. Yes. Us versus Bischoff. Let's do it. Interesting. And he even took one of our guests, Mike Weber. Look at that, man. Oh, damn.
Yeah. I wasn't familiar with him having too many guests on the show before, but a great choice. And I think we should have Mike back on soon to talk about Fight Plus and everything that's going on with, you know, that side of the business. Certainly a lot going on. Before moving on from GCW, I just wanted to quickly touch on their upcoming schedule. So that's been announced, at least thus far. On December 3rd, they'll be in Saugat, Illinois. Let's take a look at their tickets at the moment. I think it was a little bit slow last time I looked. That, yes, I still see that second row ringside has plenty of tickets available, 8 left, so it's moving along, but they've sold their front row, balcony reserved, and VIP stage. Not to make excuses for it, but GCW generally is a slow sale and then sort of catches up in the end, but it's always worth taking a look at where they are. They'll be in Jeffersonville, Indiana on December 4th. This is a popular small pro wrestling venue. So here they had some VIP seating, which is already sold out, and they have general admission standing room only, which is still available. Then they'll be back in the Ukrainian Culture Center in LA on December 16th for America's Most Wanted. This is a show where you'll have Nick Gage defending the belt. You'll also have Vikingo debuting there, sort of his after the Arizona show in for AAA a couple weeks later. Then you have them, and then followed by Defy the next night. So things have picked up for this. So they have their front row, second row sold out, and then the stage, those three rows. The third row is nearly sold out, one ticket that'll be sold out by the time you hear this likely. And then the fourth row has plenty of tickets available. The fourth row stage just has one ticket. So it looks like that'll pick up with a higher profile event in LA, because it had been kind of slow for the last few shows. Double Shot in Atlantic City, December 31st and January 1st. So front row was sold out on the 31st. The second row still has plenty of tickets available. Then on January 1st, the last scheduled show announced, or at least that was ticket sales, tickets on sale at the moment. That's probably a little bit slower than the other. So front row sold out, and 10 or more tickets still available in the second row. So still some time for that one.
When you're looking at GCW right now, and like Mike said, Mike Weber, of course, they're running 75 shows a year, UK, Japan, Mexico, LA, Chicago, New Jersey, etc. Is it too much? Or, I mean, or they're doing so good financially, you almost don't want to stop doing all the touring.
Yeah. So the question is, which we don't know. And once we, connect with Brett again to come back on the show. He's been very candid and helpful to us in answering those type of questions. One thing that we could assume is that there's a certain number of dates guaranteed to Fight Plus potentially. It might also be like a minimum, and you would make X amount on that minimum, but it could also be a certain number per year. So that's one thing you're now locked into that potentially that isn't market specific. The second thing, though, is they run a lot of the same venues over and over, which when you have a smaller operation, Brett and his team, it's hard to go out there and keep finding different places, which they do worldwide. But when you run Atlantic City, you know, which they said, actually, we do know more dates, right? Because they announced a number of dates that they would be running Atlantic City in 2023. But when you run Atlantic City, you run LA, Providence is becoming a more regular town, and so on, then you sort of have a sense like, okay, what's our minimum that we'll do? What could we do if we have a real attraction? and what do we do in merchandise sales and so on, and what will it cost us? So then you have that baseline, and then you could sort of expand a little bit more out from there, where they're always trying different places and then establishing new relationships in different markets. So the challenge is that, like, you're split a number of different ways that you can't spend as much time like highlighting every match that's coming up in every city outside of social media. But one thing could get lost in the other, and you can't like go on the ground and like paper the cities as much or do it as much local promotion when you have so many shows going on. But they seem to have settled into a rhythm that works best for them. There's not so many stretch venues where sort of like a wing in the prayer, maybe we'll do okay. They sort of like know their spaces, whether it's as low as 100 in some specific cities. I think like Milwaukee was around that, if I remember correctly, to venues that could hold, you know, in Atlantic City, right, like 1,200 or something like that. Sometimes, like, you know, it depends on the venue, like Evansville, right, like could hold many, but it wasn't going to be set up for that. So even when they put tickets on sale, they do it like conservatively a few rows at a time. So I think like 2023 touring could look like 2022, probably even a little bit more expanded, but now they have the Fight Plus cushion. So it's about providing that content rather than just the gate. But as Brett talked about, everything is important. They'll also be free of the settlement series, which, you know, it seems like more of an afterthought of putting that together quickly and using some of their contacts like Matt Tremont or something like that to sort of like utilize their venues. But when you don't have that obligation, you're a little bit freer to do what you want as well.
So when we're talking about what's going on in the world of wrestling, I think it's very interesting to kind of think, like, with, you know, the global landscape, like, where does AAA land? Like, how are they doing? What are they doing? So what's the latest on AAA? Because it seems like a lot of news as far as them has popped up as very, very newsworthy to me.
Yes. So a couple of pieces for December. So first of all, on December 28th in Acapulco, in Mexico, they're doing a live show where there's, I believe on Fight, where there's a crossover with AEW in terms of time. I wouldn't be like that worried about that element because you have your Lucha fans, but like it seemed like they were going to have the commentators there live and in English. So maybe that's a bit of a missed opportunity. I would, if I was going to avoid anything, I wouldn't worry as much about WWE outside of like WrestleMania, but AEW, you do have more of a crossover. So if you're looking to get more attention, that would be a date I would avoid. We'll talk about how that really played big, seemingly, for IWTV recently, but we'll get to that a little bit later. Then the other big news is Cain Velasquez, who had been in prison for several months, if I remember correctly. He had actually received an offer from AAA to work the Tempe, Arizona show, which is actually on the grounds of the university he graduated from. As he's released on bail, so from what I read, he has to actually pay for like a police officer to accompany him to this show, and he's allowed to go for a certain amount of time and then return back to you know, his restrictions. So I think a lot of people are rooting for Cain Velasquez based on, you know, the facts that had come out about the case, which seems like a terrible, terrible situation. And, you know, certainly shooting at someone's car, you know, when there were other people in the car, certainly didn't put himself in a better position, but it's really sounds tragic overall. Hopefully that works out for him in the end. But in terms of talking about the business of wrestling, a good move by AAA. I'm not sure how much media he can do and how comfortable he's doing it, you know, at this point. He's facing a very serious prison sentence, right? If it's, I'm not sure if he was charged with attempted murder, I don't know how that worked out legally, but, you know, obviously a very serious situation. But, you know, a smart booking for AAA in terms of certainly the market. They're not doing very well in terms of ticket sales in this fairly big venue. The last time I checked before this news, but I peeked in a little bit during the news too, was that, you know, there's several great seats still available. Most of the map is still blue for what's been put on sale. So kind of a bit of a stretch with Vikingo. I know I'm sorry, I keep messing it up every week. I'm trying, but so, you know, having his debut and then Cain Velasquez, it's sort of like it's a curiosity, but I'm not sure if you're going to move thousands of tickets. And we're just around 2 weeks out as of this recording, so maybe even 10 days out. So it's not looking great.
Interesting that he's allowed to wrestle. That's kind of was like shocking that they're letting him do it.
Yeah, I think it was like he spent a long time in jail. And I don't think he has pretty upstanding guy outside of this. And it's an extreme situation. So I guess the judge was sort of like, you know, doesn't see him as a danger otherwise under the right controls. And, you know, he doesn't have many options to make a living right now, too. I'm not sure how much he would have saved having been a top UFC star and having a short-term WWE and AAA contract. So this is the best way he can make money to support his family. So it seems fairly low risk given the circumstances, but I don't know of other situations where somebody was out on bail facing potentially attempted murder charges, if I understand the situation correctly, and like is able to perform like this.
So just to kind of do a little quick synopsis. So he tried to murder somebody that tried to rape his daughter. So I think a lot of people were on his side, but because there were some errant bullets and somebody else ended up getting hurt that wasn't the guy. I think it might actually have been the rapist's father, I think, was the one that actually ended up getting shot at. So that was kind of the gist of it. It was almost like, man, people can kind of feel for him, but when it got dangerous and other people started to get affected, not just this guy, I think then, you know, obviously the law comes into play where you can't just have vigilante justice. And I think that's the problem. But I, you know, I kind of, you know, if that's your kids, would you do the same thing? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I kind of feel for him. I kind of would almost want to do the same thing. I would want to kill the guy. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's a lot of people out there that are rooting for him to get off and get back to wrestling, or, you know, get back to AAA, or get back to, you know, get back to work, so to speak.
Yeah, I think it would be very hard for a jury to convict someone in this circumstance. You know, he clearly wasn't thinking with a right mind, as obviously as Cain Velasquez. Like, look what he could have done to this person with just his hands, right? Yeah. Like, yep. UFC, yeah. UFC, one of the, at certain points, no matter where he is, you know, in this rankings today, at, you know, one point, one of the toughest people on the planet. So, you know, if he just put this person in a corner and, you know, beat them up or threaten their lives or whatever it may be, you know, he could have settled that way, but maybe that could have ended, you know, even in a more tragic circumstance, if they were alone in a room together or something like right. that. So I don't know. But yeah, it's really a terrible situation. I remember reading in the paper years ago, this guy in Connecticut, he somehow, the story was conveyed to him wrong. And he thought that somebody did something to he thought his neighbor did something to his kid. And you know, he went in a rage and he killed the person, and it ended up being like wrong. Oh, so it was just a crazy story where, like, okay, first of all, you'd be like, okay, yes, it's justified. And then the person that he killed didn't even do anything. So, yeah, it's just crazy. We're getting heavy topics tonight.
Yeah, really. And it's funny, like at one point, Cain Velasquez, they were saying he was going to be the next Fedor. Like, you know what I mean? Like the next GOAT of the heavyweight division. So obviously at one point he was thought of to be as one of the all-time greats. Obviously it didn't really end up quite that way. You know, ask Junior Dos Santos and Fabricio Werdum, who, you know, I know he ended up beating Dos Santos twice, and obviously Werdum, he got destroyed by Fabricio. But at one point before that, he was thought of as one of the all-time greats as far as heavyweights.
Yeah, like, especially, right, he was like a college wrestler, so he had, like, that base, and he had all the other tools. So, you know, sad, you know, tragic overall, but kind of sad in that way that he had that potential and sort of, you know, that he's in the situation now. But, you know, hopefully legally it works out for him and that he finds the right home in AAA.
So let's continue on and we'll talk about some other topics, but it just looks like Tempe for right now is not doing the business they thought it would be doing.
Yeah, I think it was, like, WrestleMap had it as like a few hundred tickets moved, but like when you look at the map, probably some of those were like seat kills anyway. So I don't think it's been very much at all. It's kind of, it's a weird rollout. Like, you know, we're grateful for having Dorian Roldan of AAA on the show, but like, there's always like a lot of like talk, like, you know, AAA is going to focus on this and that. And it's like, it's in their presentations and in the media and so on. And then suddenly it's like, okay, you're doing a show in Arizona in like a several thousand seat venue. And it just drops the next day. Nobody knows about it. And you're catching up with news like, you know, that could appeal to people, but it's like been so off the radar. And like the show is coming up so soon, not that you could have done saying Velasquez, like announcing that sooner, but like, you know, the promotion of live events needs some work. And you sort of need the people that are actually doing it on the grounds in the US already, maybe to collaborate with them more, you know, from Mucha Lucha Atlanta, is just one that comes to mind. But you have a few promoters that do really well, sort of like at a grassroots level, where it's like you barely hear about it in like overall pro wrestling media, but they just seem to find that audience that wants lucha. So, and that we talked about previously, where if it's true that Conrad is going to work with AAA, you sort of need both. Like, one is like that, like, super fan where it's like buzzworthy and they just want to come to WrestleMania week and see a lot of unique wrestling, but two, to draw from fans of lucha who, you know, would want to support it on a grassroots level and like aren't following any podcasts or newsletters.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing and a slippery slope. It's like, how do we get more traction in the US, but not necessarily with like AEW, I mean like on our own? How do we do it, and how do we go to Tempe and Colorado and these places and draw well like we do in Tijuana and the other places in Mexico that they go to? So slippery slope for sure.
Yeah, I think it has to be sort of like strategic and not like one-off shows, more like book a tour, work with a promoter that, you know, knows the right venues, that knows how to, you know, advertise it, where you have your talent available to the local media and you make it a thing, and like sort of like a concert where you come through, this is the summer tour, come see these stars, this is why it's special and unique, and just like drive towards that.
Let's talk about the King of the Indies. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so, you know, I hadn't even thought about it much till Sports Illustrated mentioned it, but IWTV had the King of the Indies show where Noah Stars appeared, and it seemed to do well critically. But, you know, it crossed over with the big AEW pay-per-view that took place in Newark at the same time, right? MJF winning the belt and all the attention that got. So it was really a missed opportunity, because like I mentioned with WWE, You have fans that, you know, aren't that interested in WWE now. I mean, obviously a lot of people are, but you have a subsection of like people that love wrestling that would want to support something else and aren't that worried about WWE. But a lot of those people are interested in AEW, at least their big shows. So, you know, sometimes it's maybe this King of the Indies was booked in advance of knowing or so on, and it's hard to move dates and you have international talent and so on. But I think it's a missed opportunity, especially for IWTV, which doesn't have as many high profile events anymore. And we'll talk about some more a little bit, but is, you know, really challenged going up against Fight Plus, and often it feels like they're doing a volume game, but not as much stands out as it used to. So, you know, I was just thinking about it, just that it was a lost opportunity for them. Another lost opportunity for Noah. We talked about last week working with the promotion in New York. Unfortunately, that didn't seem to pay the talents. Now they smartly connected with King of the Indies, but not sure how many people saw it on IWTV. So still some strategic elements for them to work out. But this being an annual event for IWTV, maybe on a different night, might be the best way to go.
And it looks like Noah may be working with AEW just as far as Grey Muta is concerned, because I saw that Moxley said in a one of his indie appearances that he did, he goes, "Oh, I'll be working with Muta." And then he like paused and said, according to the fans that were there, paused, and he says, "Well, I'm not really sure if I'm supposed to say that or not." So I'm guessing Mood is on his way into AEW, because obviously Sting is being lent to Noah from AEW.
Yeah, I think it seems like politically, given the strength of AEW, that they can work these things out, that, you know, you could have a good relationship in New Japan, and then following whatever parameters they need, you could even work with Noah. I think, you know, it's a smart thing for Noah to work with AEW to expose themselves, you know, in that way. And yeah, the Sting and Muta stuff, you know, is smart. You just want to have, like, if you have aspirations for the US, you just want to have like a strategy beyond that, because look, AEW has worked with a lot of promotions, and who has come out of it for the better? So New Japan, you know, they highlighted this when they had the shared pay-per-view. It seemed like they made a lot of money from that, so they were set. But AAA, you know, I'm not sure if that put them in a better spotlight. NWA, I'm not sure that put them in a better spotlight. A little bit without a little bit of Nick Gage and GCW, I don't know, you know, if anything came of that. So, like, same thing with working with WWE when promotions do it. It always sounds appealing, because you feel like if I just get a little piece of that spotlight, it'll put my promotion in a better position. But if you really want to get a foothold in the US, it's hard to do so, like, just getting a little piece of light from like a shining star, you know, of a promotion.
So as far as MLW is concerned, what is going on with them? Because it looks like they may not be working with AAA anymore. Maybe rather be working with CMLL. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, this is from the Wrestling Observer newsletter. They said that MLW is looking to work with CMLL in 2023, which would mean the end of working with AAA. I think MLW has always been really smart about this, sort of like when everyone else goes left, they go right. When everyone goes, you know, down, they go up, whatever it is, however good alliteration works. But like, you know, AAA is getting out there in a number of ways, like we talked about with AEW, and they've had working relationships with Impact. They're doing their own things and so on. So like their stars, it's harder to get dates. Of course, Mass Republic is helping to book, you know, their stars, some of their stars on, you know, GCW and Defy and so on. So now you could see them, and it crosses over. Not that MLW is running too frequently, really, like it seems like around 5 times a year at this point. So CMLL stars aren't overexposed in the US, and they really haven't made it over here since Sinclair owned Ring of Honor, and that relationship sort of fell apart at the end. So I think that's really smart to bring over the other major promotion stars that no one else has.
So with MLW, obviously you can't work with both. I feel like as soon as you say you work with CMLL, AAA's out, and kind of vice versa. So obviously that, I mean, I guess that's a tumultuous end. I mean, that's just, you can't say bad business in a sense, but obviously you're ending one relationship to start another.
Yeah, and I think if you do it on the right terms, like Cort Bauer has been like a representative for AAA in the U.S., like sort of when they had like a pay-per-view, they were independently promoting and off and on with AAA. So like, you know, if you just say it's like not the right business right now, then I think you could come back to it at a later point if it makes sense. But I think it is a really smart idea to start working with CMLL. Like it really spices things up in a unique way. My only question is, Microman that MLW is really promoting as one of their main stars, I'm not sure, is he tied to AAA?
I'm not sure, actually. I thought he was, because I remember Conan was pumping him up that he was appearing on several AAA. So he might be a AAA guy.
Okay, I'm looking it up as we're talking about it. Microman, okay, is currently under contract with MLW and Lucha Libre AAA, at least according to Wikipedia search. So that would like the major impact that I would see if the relationship does end with AAA, because like they have this whole thing where they keep promoting him, you know, on every show. So that would be something interesting, because it looks like he had been with CMLL from 2017 to 2021 and had just, I guess, made the switch over at some point. So that would be a hard thing to navigate politically.
Will you be going to Blood and Thunder?
No, but I've always kind of wanted to make it out to an MLW show since the original I was at when they ran the Manhattan Center in 2004. Yeah.
Wow, which was nice.
A really fun show. You could actually see my friend Dubin, that's Dubin, who made his way down to the floor. And when there was like, I think it was like Terry Funk against Chris Candido, like you could see him like by the guardrails, like cheering. So I can't see me, but I took some screenshots for him when they were sort of like putting those tapes on YouTube. So MLW, as we've talked about, 2300 arena. So a fair amount of the seats weren't put on sale yet. A little bit of a waste of time, but it looks like most of the first row is still available. So sort of running the same venue. We've talked about it before. Maybe they'll be back here again in February. But, you know, it might just work for them, you know, to get multiple dates on the venue, kind of in and out of field, look for a different promotion in a different town and so on, just focus on delivering this product, this weekly product for pro wrestling TV, be in sports, and your international distributors.
So as far as New Japan Pro Wrestling is concerned, what's the latest on New Japan? Because it looks like they're running some events in Australia and New Zealand, of all places.
Yeah, so this is sort of their offshoot, which I think is branded better than New Japan US, from sort of what I could tell from afar, but right, they ran events in Christchurch, New Zealand on November 11th and Sydney, Australia on 11-13. The Observer describes it as small buildings, bad luck Fale students, some locals. In New Zealand, they had said it was before 650 fans. We talked about in the show, the Australia show, which the venue generally holds more than 1,000, but somebody in Australia had tweeted me immediately that they thought – that it was that it would be just holding several hundred with a wrestling setup. But you know, if you have those type of shows and smaller venues, and you just have some New Japan stars, but you're home growing it, then like you could start, you know, start building some momentum. I think it's harder to do in the U.S. because in the U.S., it's kind of similar to soccer, right? Like people have an expectation of like a major league product. And when you're, you know, in somewhere like Australia or Europe or so on, you know, they're high expectations, I'm sure, but it's not like, you know, they've had the promotion there for quite a while. So you have like a little bit more flexibility. People are more like receptive to like a product that's sort of feels more their own, but isn't necessarily the top stars. Then, so that's, you know, that part of the world. Oceania, I guess you would describe it, but in San Jose on February 18th, that's Battle in the Valley, one of their major shows. They've moved some tickets on the floor, a fair amount on the floor, but in the upper deck, not too many. So just looking at it quickly, it looks like maybe a little bit over 1,000 tickets moved. We'll have to check in with WrestleTix sometime soon. And then, you know, their regular venue, New Japan Strong Tapings on December 11th in the Vermont Hollywood, which is, you know, the venue that they tape their Strong in consistently.
I'm just curious, Tony Kazina, like, what is he doing all the way out there? You know what I mean? Isn't he an LA guy? What is he doing out there in New Zealand?
That's a good question. You never know where somebody finds, you know, their way to. I'm quickly searching now to see if I can find out, you know, how that progressed. But that's always some of the coolest things, like when somebody goes out, like opens a training school, and like you don't hear about them for a while, and suddenly like they're on the map, you know, in a different way. Let's say like Mr. Hughes in like Georgia, and then suddenly like some of the guys he trained are great, and you're like, oh wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, fascinating. So sometimes, like, you know, the guy's out of wrestling. Well, apparently not. Apparently he's training guys. Like, Kazina, obviously, he's training guys for Valet out there. So he's still in the business, but it's crazy. New Zealand, man. Basically, you know, on another planet. You know what I mean? He's 22 hours away from me, I think. Something like that. Crazy.
Yeah, so I see here in 2018, Valet named him as the head trainer. And yeah, he was just intermittently wrestling in Canada and a few quick stops in TNA and Ring of Honor and so on. But he seems to have really found his way out there.
What is going on with CZW?
Yeah, so a promotion that, you know, we don't talk about that much, but they actually booked Kenta on December 18th in Blackwood, New Jersey. And they sort of have a little bit of a rhythm going between Maryland and New Jersey. Havre de Grasse, Maryland, and Blackwood, New Jersey seem to be where they're doing shows. I think they record, whether it's for YouTube or wherever, in Blackwood. And then I think they're just more house shows in Maryland. So they're still chugging along. They still have their... what's it called? Tournament of Death or something, something where there's death in, thankfully not death, but it's been close before, unfortunately, but in, you know, the sticks out there in Delaware, at, I think a family owned, farm, you know, that's their highest profile show, but, there had been rumors or talk that, GCW had made an offer to buy it outright. Maybe a little bit of bad blood still there. I don't know, but they apparently they didn't want to sell, and they're kind of doing their own thing and sort of like building a little bit of momentum back.
Kenta, wow, that's a random one and a weird one. Always one of my favorites. Wow, I had no idea who's being booked for CZW of all places. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'm curious if there'll be some other shows announced around that, because that seems not only his booking fee, but, you know, a ticket back and forth seems pretty expensive.
and pretty random, like CCW Kenta. I don't know, something that isn't. I mean, old school CCW maybe, but not the present day CCW. It just doesn't seem like it fits.
Yeah, maybe they're, you know, maybe somebody's just a big fan, or they're see it as like a way, okay, like once in a while we'll like try and get back on the radar, so we'll book like an international talent and get some attention around that. I'm not sure like who they stream with, you know, these days, and how they can maximize that booking.
What is up with Championship Wrestling and David Marquez?
Yeah, so talking about sort of like getting in a rhythm and finding momentum, they seem to have really found their home at the Irvine Improv in California. You know, I don't know how big a venue this, I think it's a comedy club. Once you put a ring in there and, you know, you need the camera crew and so on, how many people you can fit in. But it seems like they announce a sellout every time they've been there, or maybe several times that they've been there. So they're returning on December 11th. Daniel Hill, who helps out one of people behind the scenes, on November 16th, he announced another sold out night for the last show that they had, another packed house, as he describes it. David Marquez had just shared that by January 1st, we'd have produced 52 weeks of, it's a little bit confusing because it's still the CWF Hollywood handle, but Championship Wrestling, 52 weeks of Memphis Wrestling. So that was new to me. I knew that Memphis Wrestling was sort of under their banner, but I didn't know Marquez was producing that directly. They've also produced MMA, boxing, pay-per-view episodes of MLW. And he just says, not bad for a guy who doesn't know anything. I don't think anyone, I don't think anyone accuses Marquez of not knowing anything at this point. 23 is going to be wild.
That's so funny, obviously being self-deprecating there, but I wonder if somebody really did say that to him at one point, and he's like, you know, it sticks in his craw that he's got to mention that. That's so funny. Like, what a random thing to say. God doesn't know anything. He's been around.
Yeah, forever. I don't want to attribute it to Aldis, but I know that, you know, they had a public spat.
Yeah, so
I'm yep. not sure how far that went, but I'm sure being in the business since helping to book World League Wrestling, or at least promoting World League Wrestling under Harley Race, you know, could have been a number of people.
Yes, for sure. So as far as Impact, what is going on for them and maybe them in the future?
Yeah, so just looking at their 2023 Q1, outside of any surprises, I think we have a pretty good sense of what January through March will look like. And it's basically more of the same, which similar to GCW, but a totally different way. You know, that's not a bad thing of like not being feast or famine, but more knowing like, okay, this is where we are as a promotion. These are the venues we're going to book. This is how we're going to tape television and our Impact Plus specials and pay-per-views, and go from there. So January 13th and 14th, they'll be in Atlanta in Center Stage, Hard to Kill, and then Hard to Kill Fallout. So 2 days there, New Year's Revolution in Kissimmee, Florida, January 20th and 21st. And so New Year's Revolution and New Year's Revolution Fallout. And then February 24th, 25th and 26th, they'll be in Vegas. No Surrender, No Surrender Fallout Night 1 and No Surrender Fallout Night 2. Sign Guy Dudley, you know, it's up to you. You have to come up with some better names of this. I'm not sure if we could attribute this to him. It's probably been called that for a while. And then March 24th and 25th, they'll be in Windsor, Ontario, which is sort of pre-pandemic. I think they were sort of like getting their momentum there. Like, this seemed like a regular venue because they're really a Canadian promotion now. They have the right size venue there. So Sacrifice, I didn't catch the name of the follow-up show, but I'm going to guess that it's Sacrifice Fallout.
Like most of them are, yes. I wonder, how are they doing, though? Are they still, you know, let's say maybe GCW 3? Are they 3? Like, as far as, like, where do they fall in the pecking order? Obviously, the two giants are WWE and then AEW.
Yeah, so interestingly, like I feel like you can have an argument for both because they're so different. Like GCW is the promotion that can really like draw money at this level, meaning like fans who are willing to hand over money to buy tickets and buy pay-per-views are now hopefully for them Fight Plus. So, they can run 75 shows a year and, seemingly make a profit with that. I don't think they have that flexibility to just run shows to run shows. They can get the buzz of the wrestling community. They can get a deal with Fight Plus. They can get some other smaller deals, let's say, with Wrestling Universe to sell some content to them and so on. They can have the merchandise. That's where they are with Buzz and everything like that. Now, Impact, they have, the parent company who's has them programmed on a national cable outlet. They have many outlets for their programming, both streaming, video on demand type platforms. They also have a fair amount of international television. A promoter in the space had once DM'd me that he didn't feel like that their deals were like necessarily paid or so on. I have no idea about that, but they're on fairly high profile stations internationally, and they're on many stations, so they have really good exposure in that way. They also have a lot of legacy social media and platform exposure, right? Their YouTube has tons of subscribers, tons of views, even though AEW may have overtaken them in some ways. Their many Twitter followers, many likes on Facebook, all that sort of stuff that they can still monetize. They have a lot of supporters, a lot of like hardcore TNA and Impact fans, although I'm not sure those fans like always translate into money. Like you don't see that in big pay-per-view buys, and you don't see that in ticket sales necessarily. I think it's generally from low hundreds to mid to high hundreds, at a good show. I'm not sure when the last time they broke 1,000 would be. I should know that offhand. I'd have to look back on my lists and so on to know that. But sort of like they're sort of like a pay-per-view day, maybe is like, if they do well, 400 to 700, and the next day, same venue, less desirable show could be 150 to 400, something like that. And which is okay when you know where you are, when you know where you stand, you might say, okay, live events might be a loss potentially just because it costs money to fly everyone in and have the television taping and so on, but you just budget it based on, okay, what's your budget for television, for streaming, what money do you have coming in, and not always look to say like, okay, we have to be 2010 TNA where we could somewhat inconsistently, but we could draw 2 million, or we could draw 2 million viewers, or we could draw several thousand, in St. Louis, in Philadelphia, and so on. That's not who they are. I don't think that's ever be who they are again. But like once you know who you are in terms of size and scale of your business, you can work towards that and be profitable, or work towards that if you're not.
What is going on with WrestleCade? They got obviously every year. I mean, they got a lot going on.
Yeah, there's always so much going on. So of course, as we've talked about on the show, Smartly Impact is connected with them. So they're running a couple of shows. They have what they term Omega Championship Wrestling Reunion Panel. They have AMLW Wrestling. Jeff Jarrett is involved. They have the podcast. So, you don't hear as much about the like independently run conventions maybe as you used to, like pre-pandemic, because you have Conrad and you have WWE and you have AEW doing a little bit here and there, but WrestleCade, is really solid. they know their market, they know who they're serving, and I think it's you know, a profitable or a great experience for promotions and for talent, you know, to get out there in different ways, especially giving older talent the opportunity to make money from meet and greets and appearances and so on. I think that really, you know, extends their careers in certain ways, and they don't have to do as much outside of the business to make a living.
What is Restival? What's going on with that?
Yeah, so this is, you know, another sort of, it's not necessarily a convention because it is just a series of wrestling shows, but this is through IWTV and especially Beyond Wrestling, sort of like their partnerships, kind of like, I'm not sure if one was an outgrowth of another or they were just totally independent, but like GCW has their collective. So this is the similar idea that they're doing in Worcester, Massachusetts, at the end of the year from the 29th to the 31st, so going into New Year's. So they have a number of like the buzzworthy promotions that that IWTV still has. So certainly Beyond, Limitless, Blitzkrieg, ICW, Pizza Party, Prestige, Pro Wrestling Grind, and then there's like a Wrestling Open, which I think closes things out. So, you know, you're able to book this venue for a number of days, and then, you know, you can draw from many of the same fans if they're fully available, or fans in and out, depending on what they're interested in, to sort of like maximize the weekend. And then you have that supported with, you know, the IWTV coverage, which I think this, along with something like, you know, King of the Indies, you know, is really important for IWTV at this point as it continues to try and keep a foothold. And I just saw that they have a Colby Carino documentary, multi-part documentary that's coming out. So that's some unique content, and certainly a buzzworthy wrestler. People are curious about his life. So that's a good way to serve your audience as well.
What's the latest on BTW, the Return of the Dragon?
Yeah, so certainly we got some great details from promoter there a few weeks ago on the program that was covered by Post Wrestling and some others. Thank you for that. So, you know, they have so many different, I think BTW sort of like knows their business and knows how to run it. They have so many different tiers. They don't show a seat map, but like there's a number of ringside sections and VIP sections that are sold out. And some others that are still available. Dorton Arena is, you know, several thousand seats. Everyone knows it as the old Crockett territory. So, you know, no one's expecting a sellout, but I'm really curious to see how they do and, you know, success for them. Now, interestingly, not on Fight Plus, but through Fight, as we talked about last week, it's a series of shows. So I don't think that they've been on Fight before. They had been in a while if they have, so that's another way to maximize the money. I don't know if the Ricky Steamboat return is getting as much attention as I would have expected. I saw a little bit of video of him doing arm drags, and he looked great doing that, not surprisingly. Yeah, and then you have certainly like the meet and greet money and so on. So like BTW knows what they're doing in this way, so it'll be curious to see how it all turns out.
So as far as this week, that's it, right? I mean, that's, we kind of covered the gamut there. We ran the gauntlet.
Yeah, so kind of fun to really cover a broad spectrum of the world of pro wrestling outside the WWE and AEW spotlight, especially in the US. I feel like sometimes like the GCW, Impact, NWA promotions can kind of take over just because there's so much going on, but it's interesting to look at, you know, the full world of the business of pro wrestling.
Yes, absolutely. So let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website tmptempire.com, and of course Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. Lavi, what do you got?
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter. I know there's rumors that it's closing or whatever, but I think they'll make it through.
The usage is doubled, they were saying. It would say it's like way, way up. So whatever they're saying, you know, whoever leaving, I guess you got more people coming in.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, Musk, for whatever he's saying that sounds a little bit off center, he spent $44 billion on it. And I don't think, like, ultimately he has all the answers, but I think he's going to try and make this work. So I think it'll be solid. So on Twitter, you can find me at LavieMarg, LavieMarg. Check out some of my long form articles at lioncubjobsearch.com. And as we are now in year three of the podcast, every week, consistent, professional, high quality, and breaking news. If you're listening, you love what we're doing. So sponsor us, advertise, support us. Great rates. You could even book 2023, the full year, at a great rate. DM me. Those are open. Or send me an email, lavimarg@gmail.com.
All right. Awesome stuff. Lavi, thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little business of the business. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.